Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, on the WDIY app, and on many streaming services. Today is May 27, 2026. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 50,644, the NASDAQ at 26,674, and the S&P at 7,520. Our topic tonight is updates on education funding. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Cindy's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So talking about education funding, what I discovered is, you know, there's a couple different ways to fund education, and there's actually so much information on it that I think I'm going to end up having to do part two next week. So part one tonight is going to be more around 529 funding and using 529s and education credits. And next week, I'm going to dive into the FAFSA and, you know, the FAFSA.gov and studentaid.gov websites and private funding and student loans and that type of thing. So I'll do that next week. But tonight we're going to talk more about using 529 plans. And much of this information comes from a weekly commentary that Valley National Financial Advisors puts out. It's called The Weekly Commentary, and we typically have a tax corner in that newsletter. And we talked about 529s because I think it's some special day on May 29th. May 29th, get it, 529. I think it's a 529 Awareness Day or something like that. So I have some notes on that. But I'm going to be pulling quite a bit of the topic tonight from that information that was put together by our tax team and Mandy Pugliese in particular, because she did it. Put it together so well. So I thought, wow, I need to share this. So we're going to talk about tax benefits of 529s and understanding education tax credits and tax implications of student loan interest and planning education savings for tax efficiency. And I do see here May 29th is National 529 Day. So that's just a couple days away. And so it's appropriate that we're talking about that this evening. And then again, next week, I'll talk more about the FAFSA and student aid to the extent I can. So education funding, talking about saving for education, it can feel overwhelming, but 529 plans are a simple and tax-friendly way to prepare for future cost. A 529 plan could also be called a qualified tuition program. It is a special savings account designed for education expenses, and one of the biggest benefits is that money in the account grows tax-free at the federal level, typically the state level as well. This means you won't owe federal income tax on those earnings as long as the funds are used for qualified education expenses. And the term 529 comes from the Internal Revenue Code section. I always think, do people understand where these monikers come from? And it is the Internal Revenue Code section 529 that governs the contributions to the plan, that withdraws the plan, what's a qualified expense, et cetera. You would find that all under the Internal Revenue Code section 529. So there are two main types of 529 plans. One is the college savings plan and one is a prepaid tuition plan. Now, as an advisor, quite often we're usually talking to clients about the college savings plans. But I think even before we had what we think of the college savings plans, where you're putting money in and investing it yourselves, before that, there was the prepaid tuition programs. I think it might have even started in Michigan, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't research that, but they're a bit different. So the college savings plan works like an investment account where your savings can grow over time, depending on how you've chosen to invest. And then there's the prepaid tuition plan. And the prepaid tuition plan allows you to lock in today's tuition rates for future use. So I know I have a friend in Michigan who used the prepaid tuition plan. And I remember when I asked, well, how much is left in it? And she kind of was like, well, nothing, you know, because that's what her son used it for. And it was all used up. And it was the prepaid tuition plan, not the investment plan. So you can use 529 plans for a wide range of education expenses. And when I'm talking tonight on the show, I'm going to be really talking about more the college savings plans, not the prepaid tuition plan. Just so you know, though, the prepaid tuition plan kind of says, you know, you think that the tuition is going to cost this more much and you're buying into it now, and then it's kind of like fixed. Whereas with the college savings plan, you can put in different amounts, and depending on how you invest it, you could end up having money left or you could be short, depending on the projection of the tuition cost, okay? And sometimes we don't know, are kids going to go to public university or private university, or might they not go at all? So perhaps next week I'll touch on the prepaid tuition plans as well to get a little bit more information on those. So tonight, talking more about the college savings plans. Again, for a wide range of education expenses. And what many people might not realize is they've really expanded what you can use 529 plans for compared to when they first started. It's really expanded quite a bit. And this is really important for this awareness, because it could make a difference in your savings for education. And it could be, you know, K through 12 or college or grad school. And when the 529 plans originally came out, it was really college, you know, college-bound, four-year degree type of education cost. And now K through 12, trade schools, you know, so it really has expanded. Could be college, university, eligible schools. And recent updates have expanded what counts as qualified expenses even further. So, for example, for K through 12, K being kindergarten, K through 12 education, it could be public, private, or religious schools. Qualified expenses may now include tuition, books and instructional materials, curriculum and online learning tools, tutoring, and certain education classes. That is new, tutoring. Testing fees, dual enrollment programs, certain therapies for students with disabilities, and even a more important benefit is starting in 2026. This was part of the enhanced expenses that are allowed. You can use up to $20,000 per year, up from $10,000 from a 529 plan for K through 12 education expenses. So typically that might be people who are in private schools. It could be religious private school or you know, just a private school, up to $20,000 per year for tuition and or any of those other expenses I mentioned. That is huge, from $10,000 to $20,000. That could be some big tax savings. And I'll talk more about those when we come back from this first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds. A powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax- and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And tonight we are talking about education funding, updates on education funding. And I'll do a part two next week talking about the FAFSA and financial aid and that type of thing, student loans. So tonight, talking mainly about college savings plans, 529 plans, and how there are expanded uses for it. And 529s can also be used for career and credential programs, not just traditional college. Qualified expenses may include tuition fees, books and supplies, equipment required for the program, certification and testing fees, continuing education needed to maintain a credential. So, for example, you know, CPAs have to have continuing education to maintain their credentials, lawyers, so continuing education that you may have to pay for. Now, quite often, usually if you're employed, your employer would be covering that, so it may not be applicable. So be careful. Don't go fund 529s thinking you're going to be paying for some expenses when it may not be your responsibility. Now, there are also tax benefits at the state level for many states. So in addition to federal tax advantages, many states offer extra benefits. Depending on where you live, you may be able to take a state income tax deduction or a credit for contributions to 529s. Each state has its own rules. Some states only offer a tax break if you contribute to that state's plan, while others allow deductions for any 529 plan. Contribution limits and deduction amounts also vary. Because of these differences, it's important to review your state's rules or speak with your advisor to make sure you're getting the full benefit. Now, let me go through some of these states according to, I just put this into Google and searched, and it came up that more than 30 states in Washington, D.C. offer state income tax deductions or credits for 529 college savings plan contributions, and most states require you to use their specific state-sponsored plan to claim the deduction, but several have tax parity, and that's from Fidelity. And those states, which means it's deductible for any state's plan. Now, we air out of Pennsylvania, and just as an example, as a Pennsylvania resident, I can take a deduction on my Pennsylvania tax return for contributions to a 529 plan anywhere in the country, as long as I have, you know, income and I have the beneficiary's name and social security number. I need that to be able to take the deduction, and it's limited to the either your income amount or the annual gift exemption. So in 2026, the annual gift exemption is $19,000. This is for Pennsylvania, and I can get that deduction made to any 529 plan in the country for anybody. It is probably, it's just very, what do I want to say? generous contribution and deduction that they allow for Pennsylvania. Other states that allow you to claim a state tax deduction or credit, even if it's invested in an out-of-state 529 plan, would be Arizona, Arkansas, Kansas, Maine, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, Ohio, and as I mentioned, Pennsylvania. So some states, it has to be the in-state plan, so it's deductible only for that home state's plan. And to get the tax deduction in these states, again, you must contribute to that home state specific 529 plan. That's Alabama, Colorado, Connecticut, District of Columbia, Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Mississippi, Nebraska, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. And there is a note that Indiana, Utah, and Vermont offer tax credits rather than deductions. And then the states without a deduction, of course, there are several states that don't even have an income tax. So, of course, there's no tax consequence to you there. That's Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming. But income tax, but no deduction. So California, Delaware, Hawaii, Kentucky, and North Carolina levy income taxes, but do not provide a 529 deduction or credit. So they are income tax states that do not allow a deduction or a credit. Because limits, caps, and rules vary significantly, you can look up the exact contribution limits for your state's plan using any number of tools. I know quite often I have used a website called savingforcollege.com. It is a wealth of information for people who are planning education, funding, spending, you know, where to invest, which plans, and it compares the different plans. So that could be important. So if your state allows a tax deduction or credit, as I mentioned, those first several states, no matter what plan in the country, then you're going to want to get the best plan you can anywhere in the country. So Utah might have a plan that's really better than your state's plan, or Nevada might have a better plan than your state's plan. So if it doesn't matter, then you're going to want to search for that. If it matters, well, then that tax deduction or that tax credit could be more powerful or worth more than, a plan that might have a higher ranking. It might be like minuscule, the differences in the investment options that you can select. So be aware of that and see what you can do to make sure you're taking advantage of those deductions. So for example, if you're a Pennsylvania resident and you want to maybe contribute to a niece or nephew's 529 plan, as a PA resident, I could do that anywhere in the country. I have a niece in Indiana. Now, frankly, I just gave her the money to put into her own 529 plan because she gets a deduction in Indiana if she puts it into the Indiana plan. I have relatives in New York. If they put money into the 529 plan for New York, they get the deduction in New York. New Jersey just recently added that, I would say in the last couple years, that if you put money into the New Jersey 529 plan, you can get a deduction on your New Jersey tax return. So that is like a reminder for people who are in any maybe of those other states, they could eventually add it. So you always kind of want to check to see if your state has new rules where maybe they now include it. And again, those states were California, Delaware, Hawaii, Kentucky, and North Carolina. But sometimes what I'll say, I might have a client who maybe has retired now. They don't need the deduction. They don't have any taxable income in Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania doesn't tax retirement monies or pensions. Maybe they don't need the deduction, but maybe they have a child in New York or a child in Indiana, a child in Virginia. Well, you could always make a gift to that child to put money into the 529 for their your grandchildren, and then your children are at least getting a tax benefit. So that's another way to kind of take advantage of that. You got to really think about these things and get clever and take advantage of it if it's available to you. Folks, we are at the second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we are talking about updates on education funding. And I will mention as well, continuing the discussion on 529 plans in particular, is recall that I said if it's a college savings plan, not the prepaid tuition, and you're making the choices on the investments, obviously, the sooner you start, the better. The earlier you start, the better, because you're growing that money tax-free much longer, and you have compounding, the power of compounding on that, and it can grow for a long time, 18 years if you start as soon as a baby is born. Back in the day, everyone used to give new babies, well, not everyone, but quite often people would give savings bonds. My kids were all gifted savings bonds from various family members when they were babies, and that's just kind of what people did. I'm not seeing people do that as much as they used to anymore, and I think it could be in part for this 529 phenomenon, because, as I said, anybody can make a contribution to the 529 account and may or may not get a deduction on their personal return depending on who they're giving it to. In some circumstances, it may have to be your dependent, but in other circumstances, it might be a contribution to a 529 for whomever. Again, follow your own state's rules for that. So you want that to grow, and there is some flexibility in the 529. So sometimes I think people worry, I'm not going to use it, or what if we don't use it all? They've also changed the rules on how you can use the 529 quite a bit, which has expanded its uses, which makes it, more likely that you will use some of it. And even if you haven't used it all and you've had it open, I think, for 15 years, and your child or whomever the beneficiary of that 529 doesn't use it all, you can use some of it to fund Roth IRAs at that point if that student, that beneficiary, has money left and they have earnings. Then they can use some of that up to $35,000 capped each year for the amount that can go into a Roth. So let's pretend it's $7,500 contribution to a Roth. Your beneficiary had earned income of at least $7,500, and they have, money left in the 529. You can make a distribution from the 529 for $7,500 into a Roth IRA for them. And it's considered like a tax-free, rollover almost. So that is something important. So you don't have to be as worried about and maybe having too much money. Or if you know that child's going to go to grad school, it can be used for that. And or if that child has siblings, you can always change the beneficiary and move it over to a sibling. If, let's perhaps say, the oldest child doesn't use it all, then the next in line can use it. You could also transfer it to other related parties, other related beneficiaries. So it could be a niece or a nephew if your child didn't need it, or a grandchild or something like that. Okay? It can kind of that beneficiary, if they didn't use it all, then they could eventually become the owner of it and use it for their children. Okay, so something to keep in mind. So we're going to talk about education tax credits as well. And this is related to the 529s because what I also see sometimes is people take the full amount of tuition and or qualified expenses out of the 529, and they might otherwise have been eligible for something called the American Opportunity Tax Credit. But because they took all the money out of the 529 to cover those expenses, they're not eligible for the American Opportunity Tax Credit. And from my perspective, if we could otherwise qualify you for it because your income is within the range, why not take advantage of it? The American Opportunity Credit is a tax credit, meaning it offsets your taxes dollar for dollar up to $2,500 on a $4,000 spend. So you have $4,000 out of pocket, you get a $2,500 tax credit. That's like free found money. So even though it's kind of $1,500 out of your pocket, that extends the use of the 529 a little bit further, if it makes sense. So let me see if I can kind of go through that a little bit. So back to my weekly commentary, tax corner information. Paying for higher education can be expensive, but tax credits can help reduce the cost. There are two main education tax credits available: the American Opportunity Tax Credit, sometimes you'll see it as AOTC, and the Lifetime Learning Credit. So the American Opportunity Tax Credit is often the most valuable credit for families with college students, and the key features include it's worth up to $2,500 per student. It's available for the first 4 years of college or vocational school. And I'll tell you, the first 4 years can actually be 5 years. And I'll tell you why that might be important as we go through this discussion. And the student must be pursuing a degree or a recognized credential, and partially refundable. You may get up to $1,000 back even if you don't owe taxes. The American Opportunity Tax Credit covers more than just tuition and includes expenses for books, supplies, and equipment you need for classes. So let me explain what I meant by, and then I'll talk about the Lifetime Learning Credit when we come back probably from the break, but let me explain what I mean by 5 years. It says available for the first 4 years of college or vocational school. So recall, kids usually start in the fall. And so they will have the fall of, for example, 26 and the spring of 27, then fall of 27, spring of 28. And so they usually end in what we would deem to be the fifth year. And I have had on an occasion where if our clients are working and sometimes in their highest earning years, their income may be over the threshold for allowing the American Opportunity Tax Credit. So, for example, in 2025, if you made as a married couple $180,000 or more, then you wouldn't have been eligible for the American Opportunity Credit. So I've had on occasion what happens, someone's working, they're making too much money, but guess what? They retire, and in that last spring semester, if they're not working, now their income's come down, and now they might have the opportunity to claim the credit. So we want to make sure that if they had not been able to get the credit for those first few years of education, because remember, the American Opportunity Credit is 4 years of college, we can get it in perhaps that last year. So you kind of want to watch for that. The other thing, speaking of, you know, being eligible for it within a certain income range, you may have opportunities to manage the income on your tax return by making contributions to 401ks, which reduces your federal taxable income, or making a contribution to a health savings account if you're someone who is enrolled in a high deductible health plan that qualifies you for a health savings account. So there are certain ways you can lower your income while you're working to keep it within the range to make to perhaps allow or make you eligible to take the education credit. And that's usually not available to the student themselves because they're usually a dependent on the tax return of their parents. And it's the parents' income that they're looking at. So you want to kind of manage the income to make sure you're eligible and take advantage of that credit. And remember, if you have a 529, I said, if you make all of your payments out of the 529, then you had nothing out of pocket and you wouldn't be eligible for the credit. So we're going to talk about how to kind of do that to be eligible for the credit and still use the 529 money. I'll talk about that when we come back from the break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. We are talking about updates on education funding. Phone number is 610-758-8810. If you have questions, and again, as a reminder, next week I will talk about the FAFSA and diving into that. And you might think, why am I talking about education in May, at the end of May? Kids are graduating. Nobody's going to college right now. Well, it is going to be, it's National 529 Day on May 29th, which is Friday. So it's appropriate to talk about education. And, you know, quite often people are moving their kids out of college at this time of year. You know, we're having a lot of graduations and it does make you think, oh, shoot, I've got to start getting ready for this. It could be, you know, a niece or a nephew or a sibling who's, you know, going through their education. And it's a reminder to make sure that we're doing everything we can to take advantage of either tax breaks, tax credits, or, you know, tax-free investing with, you know, investment vehicles like 529 plans, college saving 529 plans. So we were talking about now education tax credits and making sure that we kind of coordinate the benefits. We talk about double dipping. You can't double dip. But boy, oh boy, I feel like there's a lot of flexibility with this. And the idea with the American Opportunity Tax Credit, as I mentioned, it is a dollar for dollar offset on taxes. But recall what I said, dollar for dollar offset on taxes, you have to have taxes to get the tax credit other than the $1,000 refundable portion. So if you have $4,000 out of pocket, you would qualify for the $4,000 of qualified expenses. And when I say for the American Opportunity Credit, the qualified expenses are tuition, books, supplies, and equipment for classes. You have to be very careful when you talk about education funding, education spending, and qualifying for various, you know, education benefits, because some of the benefits have different criteria. So just like I said, different states have different credits and or deductions for 529s. The different education benefits also have to be looked at very carefully. For the American Opportunity Credit, to get it, you have to have $4,000 out of pocket spent on tuition, books, supplies, and or equipment. And I have seen where people come in and say, oh, I took money out of the 529, and then I look at the 1098-T, which is the tuition statement from the school, and it says, oh, tuition was $10,000 and scholarships were $12,000. And I'm like, why did you take money out of the 529? Your child had complete scholarship that covered all the tuition. So you have to be really careful to coordinate the benefits and make sure that you understand what you're doing. There are little things that we can do as tax preparers that are allowed. We can, in that case, I did see this happen. And so the tuition ended up being covered by a scholarship. And what we did is we disqualified the tax-free scholarship and made it taxable to the student. And when we made it taxable to the student, then it was as if the student, you know, had paid, and the whoever claims the dependent gets the tax credit. And it worked out that we could still get the education tax credit by making some of the scholarship taxable to qualify them for the tax credit. And when we made the scholarship taxable to the student still didn't have, you know, taxable income at that point because it was below their, you know, the threshold for taxes. So there are little things we can do, but it can get a little complicated. basically, you want $4,000 of tuition. So when I said no double dipping and you want to coordinate, what you can still use the 529 for is room and board. And the cost of room and board that you can take out of the 529 has to be the standard rate that the college would have assessed. So whether your student is on campus and the room and board is right there on that, you know, the tuition transcript that you have to ask your child to get because the school doesn't give it to the parents. You have to say, hey, kid, please print out the transcript of your activity for the school year. And it's actually calendar year that we have to match up, by the way. You get that printout and you can see what the charge was for the room and board. But if your student is off campus, you still want to look at the college website to see what they would charge for room and board, because that is allowable distribution for the 529 to keep that 529 tax-free. So you heard me say, if you invest in a 529, it grows income tax-free, and it stays income tax-free if used for qualified education expenses. So this is where we have a fork in the road for the American Opportunity Tax Credit. Qualified education expenses are tuition, books, supplies, and equipment, whereas for the 529, it's all of those plus room and board. Okay? So you want to use the 529 for the room and board and whatever tuition is beyond the $4,000 that we're going to use for the American Opportunity Tax Credit. Okay? The point is, for listeners, it is a little tiny bit complicated, and just know that it should trigger something when you're pulling money out of your 529 or you're filing your tax return. There should be, you know, something that's saying, wait, might this apply to me? And what can I do ahead of the game, you know, to be in front of these decisions? Remember, I said you could put more money into the 401k or HSA to lower your income to make you eligible for the American Opportunity Credit. And I also want to make sure that I communicate that the distributions from the 529 have to match the year of the expense. So, for example, you pay tuition out of your checkbook in August for the fall semester, and you pay, let's say, $20,000. And you think, well, the school year is 2026 and 2027. I'll just reimburse myself next year. No, if you paid tuition of $20,000 in August of 26 and you want to reimburse yourself for the $20,000, you have to do it in 26. They have to match. You have to match the distribution with the year of the expense. Okay, be very careful of that. And quite often, you know, the IRS isn't necessarily auditing these. You know, I don't see it that often. But if you don't fill out your tax return appropriately, they will probably send you a letter asking for the receipts and transactions, etc. So it's also critically important that you also fill out your tax return the proper way, with the 1098-T showing the tuition and how much are qualified education expenses and what did you, you know, take out of the 529. Make sure it all matches up. And it's, you know, just like anything else on our tax return, we're signing under penalties of perjury that we've, you know, disclosed and reported accordingly. The IRS doesn't know if you actually had all those qualified education expenses because you're not required to provide the receipts to them, but you definitely need to keep it in your records. Okay, that's the American Opportunity Tax Credit. Lifetime Learning Credit, same kind of thing. That Lifetime Learning Credit is more flexible and can be used in a wider range of situations. And for that, it is a $2,000 tax credit per tax return each year, not per student. So, for example, my daughter went to grad school. She was already adult, independent. But she did grad school. It took her several years. But $10,000 one year, $10,000 the next year, $10,000 the next year. So she actually got the lifetime learning credit over a number of years for every $10,000 that she was spending for her master's degree. And that kind of really took care of the taxes on her income that she was earning while she was that grad student. So that was quite favorable and helpful for her as well. And that is available for any level of post-secondary education, including graduate courses. It can also be used for job skill improvement courses, and there's no limit on the number of years that you can claim it. But however, unlike the American Opportunity Credit, you cannot get a refund from the Lifetime Learning Credit. You can only use it to reduce taxes. So the American Opportunity Credit has that. Of the $2,500, you can get $1,000 of it refundable, even if you don't have income tax. If you have income tax, it's up to $2,500 total. And for the Lifetime Learning Credit, it's $2,000. Now, let me add something there. I have had circumstances where the client may not have had income tax. So in that circumstance, we may want to add income to the tax return to make sure that we're going to use that full income tax credit. And how we do that is in circumstances where my taxpayer has an IRA, I can convert some of their IRA money to a Roth, pay the income tax on the IRA conversion, hopefully give us enough income tax to then get the full $1,500 tax. And you might think, how often does that happen? Well, it does. It does happen, and we plan for that and make it all work. It's really great. Who qualifies to claim either credit? You or your dependent. So it can be even you, yourself. And you must receive a Form 1098-T from an eligible school. The school must be a qualified post-secondary institution, such as a college, university, or trade school. There are also income limits, as I mentioned earlier, and I'll give you the numbers for single as well now. Full credit is available if the income is below $80,000 for single or $160,000 married filing joint. The credit is reduced above those levels, and you get no credit if your income exceeds $90,000 or $180,000 married filing joint. So there's a phase out for single people between $80,000 and $90,000, and there's a phase out for married filing joint between $160,000 and $180,000. And the single amounts also apply to head of household. What expenses qualify? Qualified expenses generally include tuition, required enrollment fees, and these expenses, as I mentioned earlier, must be paid for an academic period that begins in the same tax year or within the first 3 months of the following year. For me, that's too hard to keep track of in my head, so I'm used to telling clients same year of expense, same year of distribution from the 529. For the American Opportunity Tax Credit only, qualified expenses also include books, supplies, and required equipment. So that would not apply to the Lifetime Learning Credit, which is basically the tuition and or required enrollment fees. And I had talked about coordinating your benefits plan carefully when using education credits, because we can't double dip. You cannot use the same expenses for more than one benefit. If you pay for tuition using tax refunds from a 529, you cannot use those same expenses to claim the American Opportunity Credit or Lifetime Learning Credit. As I mentioned, those are called double dipping. So in many cases, you can maximize savings by splitting expenses, as I mentioned earlier, using some for the tax credit and others for the 529 plan withdrawals. So you do want to carefully coordinate those to get the most value. But bottom line, education tax credits can provide valuable savings while paying for college or career training, and choosing the right credit and coordinating it with other benefits such as 529 plans can make a meaningful difference. Consider working with a financial advisor to create the best strategy for your situation. It's wonderful to support education and have these benefits available to us from a tax perspective, that we can take advantage, you know, of getting something for investing in education for either ourselves or for our children. So, you know, why not take advantage of it when we can? Folks, we are at the last break. If you have questions, Cindy's in the studio. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY, also available on the WDIY app and many streaming services. We are talking about updates on education funding tonight, and next week I will continue the discussion related to FAFSA, filing for student aid, financial aid, etc. To kind of wrap up the show tonight, we've got, you know, still time if you have questions. Phone number is 610-758-8810. I'm going to talk a little bit more about some other kind of education tax planning attributes, and that would be student loan interest. So again, as graduation season approaches, many families need to begin repaying student loans taken out to pay for college. It's important for taxpayers to understand the potential tax benefits available through the student loan interest deduction. So in addition, 529 education savings plans may now be used to help repay student loans somewhat, so be careful, creating additional planning opportunities. So the first thing you need to know is there is a student loan interest deduction, but I'm going to be honest with you, and maybe it's just the clients that I have, I'm not sure. Rarely does anybody get to take the deduction because it phases out over certain income limits. So, you know, just be aware of that. Don't go in thinking you're going to get a big deduction for your student loan interest because it's also capped. So taxpayers may deduct up to $2,500 of qualified student loan interest paid during the year, but the deduction is phased out if your modified adjusted gross income is between $85,000 and $100,000 for single people, or $175,000 and $205,000 if married filing joint. Taxpayers who are married filing separate are not eligible for the deduction. This deduction is an above-the-line deduction, which means it's available even if the taxpayer does not itemize deductions. Now, you know, I know there's some other restrictions around this student loan deduction, and if I have time next week, I can try to, like, dig into that a little bit. It gets complicated. It's like, who is responsible for the loan? Who signed for the loan? Who was it for? Is it the dependent? So it's even just beyond just the limits. There's other restrictions as well. It's not like if my child takes out the loan and I'm filing the tax return, it's not my loan, it's my child's loan. Am I going to get the deduction for the student loan interest because she's my dependent or he's my dependent? Because sometimes, like with the education credits and education tax benefits, it's whoever claims the student as a dependent is the one who is eligible for that, those things. So the student loan interest deduction, it's going to depend. So it's too much for right now, but just know that there is a potential deduction depending on your circumstances. But more importantly, I wanted to mention that you can use the 529s for student loan repayment to some extent. So 529 plans are no longer limited to tuition and related education expenses. Families may now use up to $10,000 lifetime per beneficiary. So from a 529 plan, you can repay qualified student loans tax-free. It has to be qualified student loan tax-free. However, interest paid using tax-free 529 distributions cannot be claimed as part of the student loan interest deduction. So there is some coordinating in that as well, meaning if we paid $10,000 from a 529 toward the student loan, and there was an element of interest in that repayment, then I now cannot take a deduction for that amount of interest because I got a tax benefit from using the 529, which was tax-free. You see, no double dipping again. So it's really important to organize your records and for record keeping. So some tips would be in order to maximize the available deduction and simplify tax preparation, consider the following steps. One, retain Form 1098E issued by the loan servicer. Track the total interest paid throughout the year. Separate the interest payments from the interest payments from the principal payments. Keep records of any 529 plan distributions used for the loan repayment, and maintain copies of payment confirmations and loan statements. Organizing these documents by tax year can help support deductions and reduce confusion at filing time. And what I want to mention is you may have more than one student. You might have two or three students, meaning or dependents in your family, and perhaps one is using all of the 529 for their tuition and education costs and room and board, and the other student may have gone, you know, to a local college that doesn't cost as much, in-state tuition, whatever it might be, and they're not using all of their 529, but maybe your older child had to take out student loans to kind of cover the shortfall. You can always transfer, trustee to trustee transfer, money from one 529 to another 529, you know, for a relative. So let's say we have oldest daughter, younger son. Younger son has money left in his 529. Older daughter has a student loan. Hey, younger son has an extra $10,000 in theirs. We can move it to older daughter and use that $10,000 toward the student loan. Okay, you can also open up a new 529. Perhaps you only had one 529 for your oldest and you left those poor subsequent children, you know, high and dry, and the oldest child has money left. You can always move that money to a new 529 with a new beneficiary as long as they're relative, and there's certain qualifications around that. Make sure you understand that before you do it. And, you know, use the 529 monies for that subsequent child and or, in this case, as I mentioned, student loan balances. So really important information. Planning considerations we already talked about where we said nearing the income phase out limits. You want to use strategies you can to reduce your taxable income, such as putting extra money into a retirement plan or health savings account, and evaluating remaining balances in 529s, whether you want to use those for student loan repayments, and or if you had that 529 for the 15 years and your child is now going off into the workforce and would qualify for a Roth IRA, you can use some of the funds to help fund that Roth IRA up to $35,000, subject to earned income and subject to the annual limit of putting money into a 529. So the last noted item in our little weekly commentary was in our tax corner was planning education savings for tax efficiency. As a reminder that May 29th is National 529 Day, and it's a good day for families to review their education savings strategies and potential tax benefits to confirm that accounts remained aligned with current goals, and to coordinate those education tax benefits. So several tax advantage tools may help families save and pay for education expenses. We talked about 529 education savings plans, not to forget about the 529 prepaid tuition plans. Frankly, though, again, as a financial advisor, I don't know if I've ever had a client do the prepaid plan. I when they first came out, I know people talked about them, but I am not aware of anyone having done the prepaid plan except my friend in Michigan. But remember, I said I thought Michigan might have been the first state to have introduced those, because shortly after that, I believe the 529 savings plans came to fruition. And I think that the reason the savings plans look a little bit more attractive is because people feel like they have more control over them, meaning if I save all this money and my child ends up going to a lower cost school and I have all that money left in the 529, now I get to decide what happens to it. So that could be one of the advantages, and I can move it around to my other children, et cetera. So again, coordinating the education tax benefits for the 529 education savings plan with the American Opportunity Tax Credit, if you're within those income limits, for extras. School. So, for example, let's say someone, ended up taking 10 years to go for their undergrad. And I told you the American Opportunity Tax Credit was only available for 4 years. Well, now you can use the lifetime learning credit for that if you're eligible. We also had mentioned something called the Coverdell Education Savings Account. Got to tell you, financial advisor, 30 years. Never saw anybody do the Coverdell Education Savings Account either, maybe one. And I think back when those first started, it was also limited on how much you could put into it. So I think those just never took off after the 529s were introduced. So someone might have some out there, but just I don't see them. And then remembering about the student loan interest deduction. So while these benefits can work together, careful coordination is important because the same education expense generally cannot be used for more than one tax benefit. As we gave an example, if tuition expenses are used to claim the American Opportunity Tax Credit, those same expenses cannot also be treated as a tax-free distribution from a 529 plan. So you do want to avoid that double dip. One of the most common education tax mistakes is claiming multiple tax benefits for the same expense. Make sure to carefully allocate expenses between those 529 withdrawals, the education tax credits, employer educational assistance programs, and student loan interest deduction. So in many cases, it may be beneficial to use enough out-of-pocket tuition expenses to fully qualify for an education credit before applying 529 funds toward those remaining costs. Similarly, interest paid with tax-free 529 distributions used for student loan repayments cannot be deducted under the student loan interest deduction rules. Proper planning throughout the year can help maximize total tax savings while maintaining compliance with IRS rules. So make sure you keep track of all those tax documents, the 1098-T for tuition, 1098-E for student loan interest, 1099-Q for the 529 distributions, and then make sure you have a record of the payment confirmations and receipts. Records of books, supplies, and qualified expenses. Ask your kids to print out those transcripts with all the details of, you know, the various costs that are incurred when our, you know, little ones go off to college. Review the education savings plans, 529 account balances, and annual contributions. Some people worry about overfunding them. I told you there are other options. If there's money left in the plan, you can do trustee-to-trustee transfers. You may have the option for the Roth contributions. Again, there's rules around those, years of, you know, having it open, et cetera. Knowing that you may change beneficiaries to related parties, potential state tax benefits, just kind of a number of things to coordinate. So final thoughts from our tax corner, where education tax planning is most effective when savings strategies, tax credits, and distributions are coordinated together. By understanding how various education benefits interact and maintaining organized records, family can improve tax efficiency while supporting long-term education goals. And I have from time to time had people say, well, I don't know if my child will go to college at all. And so maybe you're fearful of saving in a 529 plan. I have had clients who actually set up separate investment accounts and they label it education. So they still could be saving for education. They may not be doing it in an education account. They may not have all the, you know, most beneficial tax benefits, but at least they're still saving. And at such time, if they can get a contribution, a deduction on their tax return, they can do it at that point then. Maybe you put the money in and you take it back out. Quite often, I haven't seen where you have to have the money in for any period of time. It might depend on the 529 and the state from which you're filing your tax reporting. All right, so next week we are going to talk about, we're going to continue our discussion on education funding and updates in education funding, where I will kind of dive into the FAFSA a little bit. I haven't done that in a long time. That still could be relevant for a lot of people. What I have found is, you know, you really have to make almost no money to get financial aid in the terms of financial aid that we don't have to pay back. But you still might want to do the FAFSA to get access to student loans. Okay. Thank you, Cindy, for being here. Thank you, Bridger. Thank you, listeners. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.